Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. Mark Gessner is back, and we've been talking about transitions, change, and creating new realities. You have been so successful at writing so many different chapters. Did you ever expect that you would have this new life in Tampa?
No, actually, I did not. I never thought I would live in Florida. Frankly, I didn't. It wasn't something on my radar. And it wasn't until an opportunity came up that seemed like a great fit at the time at St. Leo University that helped me take the leap. So no, I didn't think I was going to be here.
Okay. Now I've been fortunate enough to have you twice before as my guest in this next chapter series. Are there things that, you know, when we closed the interview, you said, I wish I had said this, or darn, I wish I had said that. Are there things that you wish you had told us that you haven't told us that you want to tell us now?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. I was thinking about one piece because we've been talking about major influences. You've asked about mentors and different career shifts. And something that I really relish is the smaller interactions and things you learn along the way from, maybe they're not called mentors, but just from life experience that you learn along the way. And then you try to incorporate into your career, or into your leadership. So I wouldn't mind talking a little bit about some of the folks I met along the way who had a big influence.
I would love to hear about those people. I know you mentioned a Unitarian minister once, but who else? Who else gave you the insights, the skills, or just the exposure to be able to be the executive director of the Tampa JCCs?
So, yeah, I mentioned a Unitarian minister, a former Outward Bound instructor, and those people I got to really know over time. But there's been shorter interactions with people that were great lessons. So, for example, when I was traveling in India, it was in Darjeeling at a tea garden. And a group of us who didn't know each other beforehand met up with a tea taster, professional tea taster. So think of a wine connoisseur who knows different wines. This gentleman really knew about teas. And something that he was able to do was we were about to taste the tea, and he knew what each of us would likely enjoy because we were from different countries. And he knew that the tastes from the people from the U.S. versus Europe versus someone from Japan, each were used to drinking different kinds of teas. And as a result, he was pretty sure, and he was right, that we would be inclined to choose a certain tea as our favorite. I was really amazed by that here was someone who was really an expert in something and knew the impact of product or the experience that he was so immersed in. So I thought I learned from him about it's not only knowing your own product, so to speak, but the impact it has on different sorts of people. And it may not be the same impact on everybody, if that makes sense. So he was at such a sophisticated level. I just had great respect for the guy. And I always remembered his understanding of the people he was working with and who he was trying to influence. So that was one example. Another quicker story is around when I worked on a farm, and I first was started out in the field, and it was quickly recognized that that wasn't the best fit for me because I was slow. I recognized pretty quickly that, and the farmers recognized that I was better on the farm stand than I was in the field. So that's good. Understand where you fit,
good,
and where you can
know.
Actually contribute. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I owned it. I realized I was slower. And then worked a lot with preparing the farm stand, making things look really beautiful, then working with chefs. And the lesson was that the finest chefs, because I would work with them to deliver their vegetables, the finest chef treated me really well. The chefs that were maybe not strong treated me not so well. Really, they treated me poorly. And so in return, at that point in my mid-late 20s. The finest chef got exactly what they wanted. They got the cream of the crop, and the other chefs didn't really care. So I threw the, frankly, threw like what was left. They never seemed to notice. So there was a lot of, a bunch of lessons to that farm experience, but, you know, about how do you treat people? And then they obviously, those fine chefs, they weren't stupid. They realized maybe part of it was genuine. Part of it was to make sure they did get good vegetables. But again, there was some lesson there about how you treat people, how you get quality, how do you support people, how do you connect with them, that stuck with me. So those are a couple of examples, but I kept meeting. I've met a whole lot of people along the way who it didn't have to be for a year's experience. You can meet them once, a poet in El Salvador who treated me with great hospitality. And at the time when I asked him, how could you treat me, someone from the U.S., where we've had some challenges between our countries, how do you treat me with such great hospitality? He said, well, we of all people should know that a government and its people don't always agree. You're welcome here.
And I love that.
Just nuggets that. Mm-hmm. So my reason for launching into these different things is just to remember who knows where you're going to learn stuff from, and who knows who's going to have real influence in your life. I met that guy for a couple hours, if that. And I have a picture of him still in my office. And I think about that. And it matters a lot to me, and it helps shape, I hope, how I might treat other people.
I want to go back to the chefs and talk about how that applies to leadership. What do you see as the connection between being respectful to the farm stand boy or the farm stand kid or the farm stand worker and leadership versus the other chefs who sounds like they were a little bit dismissive and maybe had a higher opinion of self than was required. What are the connections or the tie-ins that you see between those experiences and how you lead now?
One is just the basic principle of you need to treat everyone like a human being and know that there's talent and people who have a lot to contribute no matter what their position or what their job is. So I think that's an obvious piece. I think to be purposeful in how you're approaching things. I mean, whether the fine chefs were doing it somehow manipulate the situation, I don't know. I never felt that way. I felt like what they had great clarity on what they were trying to achieve and how the pieces and people fit into that. And they help influence the way that would happen. So if you're in a leader of whatever sort of organization and you have clarity about what you're trying to achieve and how to support people to be at their best so that they can contribute to that overall vision and be part of it and own it, then that could really lead to the outcomes that you're seeking. So that chef, the finest chef, had clarity on his purpose and what he was trying to achieve and how different people connected to it. So just to do that though, without manipulation, but with real respect for the people that you're working with and what you're trying to achieve.
So thinking about your role as the executive director there at the Tampa JCCs, how do you communicate clarity throughout the enterprise?
I used to have a simple answer for this, but now that I'm trying to do it, it's a lot harder than I recall when I was teaching or coaching other folks, just to be real here. Yes. So I'm going to tell you how I think I'm doing it, it's like a constant challenge. It's just to be real about it, because you have to keep communicating, the old over-communicating, keep saying what you're trying to achieve. You think you've said it a million times, and then the next time you say it, someone said, "Oh, I didn't know that's what you thought." So you have to be consistent and really keep articulating it. And I think you need to articulate it in different ways. One of the things I'm doing now is I'm trying to put in a short list, what are the real leadership activities that I could be doing that help support the management and the operations that I spend a lot of time on. So an example of that is we have a newsletter about the upcoming events for the month. And now I'm writing a little introduction to it that says a little bit about something of my perspective on the activities or on the community in a way that gets my voice out there in some way so that people have a sense of where I'm coming from. And I'm hopeful that says, hey, that guy who's the executive director, he really, this is what he cares about connection. He cares about community. And presumably he's trying to infuse that into the different kind of programs and activities that are happening at the center. So that's a way of making sure you have a voice and you're communicating it in different ways.
I like that example. I also like that example of you. A piece of the example is that you are reflective and you look to what are the things that I can do to make leadership come to life. So I like that. One of the things you talk about in your book, Your Life is Your Message, is getting to your core. What is it that you found or continue to find, because we're all evolving, in your core that has enabled you to move into this next role and into this next chapter?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely clear. It's all about community and engagement and aligning your actions with your values. And so you got to live it every day. And so my core, that's what I thrive on. And seeing a strong community, seeing people flourish in different ways, whether they're working in that community or being served by that community, that, I know it sounds a bit a cliche, but they could be their best selves because they're in an environment where they feel like they belong and they can connect and they can show up in the way they want to. So I think that gets at my core.
So how do you help people to do the deep dive? Because you lead a pretty sizable organization. You've got other leaders who are reporting to you. How do you get them to learn to stop and to come inward, do the deep dive, reflect, and build their self-awareness?
Yeah, I think in part you do that when you're one-on-one with people and asking them the questions about how they're spending their time. Is this what they want to do? Is this, you know, you're challenging them to be themselves. I think in our earlier discussion, I talked about Rudy, who's always asking questions. I think you got to ask people good questions. I think I talked about Steve, who told great stories. You got to make sure people are getting a chance to feel like they tell their story. That's, there's a great quote about Barry Lopez, and he talks about how stories are precious for people, and you really have to help take care of the stories that people come to you with so that that you can nurture them and they can feel like they can tell their story. So if I can do that, if people feel like they're comfortable enough to tell me about what they really want to do or what their challenges are, then I think I can help them ask good questions, tell their story, and have the kind of impact that they want.
I like that. Listening for the stories, drawing the stories out. Stories are powerful. I mean, I think it's powerful, yes, for us to share our stories, but it's equally, if not more powerful, to create an environment where people can share theirs without judgment, without fear of, you know, something's going to happen to me if I share my story. And I think that goes back to building an inclusive environment. Really building an environment where all people are valued and valuable. One of the things that you said in one of our earlier interviews is that the Jewish Community Center is open to all, that it is an inclusive organization. I see that as really important, particularly at this juncture in our country and in our world, So I want to switch gears just a little bit, and I want to talk about this whole notion of mission and vision, personal mission and personal vision. This is something else that you explore in your book. And I have to tell you this, I just have to tell you this. This week I was doing a learning circle, and my group of women leaders is using the book. And one of the women said to me, Joanne, this was so anxiety provoking for me in this book. And I'm like, why? She says, because I don't think like this. And, you know, I'm doing these things. And I was like, wow. And she says, so it's been very anxiety provoking. And I asked her, can you sit with that? Can you just sit with why that provoked anxiety? And then can you step away from it for a while and come back to it? What are your thoughts on that? Why do you think that discovering personal mission, personal vision, finding voice can be anxiety provoking for people?
Yeah, well, I think the main thing is, what if you're living a life that isn't consistent with what's coming up in your mission and your purpose? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it. Like, it makes you be real and mm-hmm. see, do you have that alignment? Do you have that coherence between what you're doing and what you say you want to be doing? Mm-hmm. So that might be a part of it, I suspect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just the language of it. Maybe it feels too mushy in some way. I don't know, that some people have a different way of thinking about things. But I think the scariest part is that if you really immerse yourself in this stuff, it's you do a deep dive into your values, you do a deep dive into what you're trying to achieve. And sometimes that could be tough to see what comes up. And maybe that'll cause you to, you know, have a next chapter instead of continuing on based on inertia or what you think you should be doing.
Yeah, I think the shoulds are very powerful. I think that many, many people live their lives on shoulds. This is what's expected of me. This is what I should be doing. And that keeps them from the deep desire. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's. I think it's a common affliction to do what you think you should be doing, or do what you think other people think you should be doing, or somehow you went to school for something or prepped yourself for a certain arena. And it's not quite a fit. I mean, I think that really relates to this whole show around next chapters, right? What prepares you to transition from one chapter to another? So I would hope, if you're working through the book with people, that makes them be crystal clear on, am I in the right? Should I be in this chapter? I'm in the right place. Can I tweak what I'm doing now or help shape what I'm doing now so it feels like a really strong fit? Or is it, it's maybe what I thought I should be doing because I got a degree in this, or I was stepping up the ladder, but then it takes some courage to say, hey, no, I've explored it. I gave it a really good chance. I didn't just give up early, but I'm really know that this is not quite the right fit. How do I explore something else? Maybe it's just the timing, or I've done it for long enough. Mm-hmm. Whichever. I think mm-hmm. the change is tough, right?
It's difficult.
It's not an easy thing. Yeah.
It is difficult. And retooling and reskilling are difficult at any age and any stage. It is difficult. I'd like to talk a little bit about fulfillment. Fulfillment. One of the things, when I finished reading Your Life is Your Message, I guess one of the things that made me feel good about this chapter of my life is that it is fulfilling. And I think part of that is because I have clarity on purpose and why I'm here. When people think about fulfillment, sometimes I think they get confused and think about happiness. When you hear the word fulfillment, what do you think? Because it looks like you're leading a very fulfilling life.
What I think of right away is, I synonymous almost with fulfillment is feeling at home. And it's it's the last chapter of the book. It's something I don't want to say obsessed with, but I think it's something that it matters a lot to me in thinking about fulfillment. That if you can feel comfortable in your own skin, if you feel like your values are aligning, your actions are aligning with your values, that this is not complacent, but that you feel the alignment, that's where fulfillment happens, and that's where you feel at home. And so home isn't necessarily a physical place, right? In my mind, I've traveled a lot and I've had a few different kinds of positions, but I know that fulfillment's going to happen when I feel there's alignment and I feel at home. So I'm always really curious to talk to other people and ask them about where's the alignment? Are they feeling at home? What are the signs of that? How do they know that, yeah, this is where I should be? Or mm-hmm. this is not where I should be because there's some sort of dissonance that I can't resolve.
Mm-hmm. How do you talk to them about resolving the dissonance and creating a home?
I think it's part a lot of questions about where do they feel most alert? Where do they feel most energized? Where do they feel like, yeah, that there is that alignment between how they're spending their days with what their values are, and that they feel powerful in a way, right? Mm-hmm. They feel like, hey, I'm fully present, I'm alive, I'm engaged in this, and I can have the kind of influence that I want as a leader. So that's a lot of the discussion is around that alignment and a sense of clarity about what the path they're in. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. I think that asking those questions is important. I also think that providing examples, I think that if people can see, like for somebody to see you and know that this is chapter 3 for you. I mean, we've gone from hostels to universities to now here we are as executive director of a pretty big regional operation. I think helping people see examples matters a lot, and being willing, like you said, to share your story and to share not just the pretty stuff, to share the discomfort, the dis-ease, to share all of that helps people as well. Yeah. I think that also minimizes the what if I fail? Yeah. Yeah. I think that does. So this is your second chapter. This is your third chapter. What's your next chapter? That's my question. What are you going to do next? What do you want to explore? What are you getting ready for?
So I got to be careful when I answer this question because I've only been here not quite 8 months yet. And so I'm not quite ready for the next chapter. You know, okay. I want to make sure my colleagues, my board hear that, if any one of them happen to listen to this. So I want to be aware of that of the question. And I'm not ready to leave at this point. But I do think about at some point in the future that there might be one more chapter in this whole idea of social enterprise and social impact, and how do you help leaders to run organizations and be innovative, be entrepreneurial in aligning their values with action to run sustainable organizations. So that has been a thread in some of my work in higher ed, first in youth hostels, in higher ed, and now here at the JCC. That social enterprise world has always been a part of it. And so I could see at some point in the future focusing wholly on that, being a social entrepreneur. Yeah.
Do you ever see yourself returning to academia?
Maybe to teach a class, but I think not too much more than that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It seemed like you loved it. So it just seems like it would be something that would be a part of your next chapter. One of those threads that continues for you.
Well, a big thing of all my work has been partnerships. And so I'm definitely always right now I'm working to partner with a few different higher ed institutions here in Tampa, just on the other side. So instead of being the one in the university partnering with the nonprofit or business, I'm the one trying to partner with the university. So there's that connection. I'm sure I'll keep that connection.
So I want to talk a little bit more about readiness. I believe nothing's wasted, that we have to look back and see, how can I use this failure? How can I use this success? How does a person continue to ready themselves for their next chapters?
There's part of just asking a lot of questions for if you have an idea of where you want to head next, to really have some honest conversations with people who are in that role I didn't change from anything that I didn't have some sense of before I was going into it. So I talked to, I went into higher ed and got advanced degrees because I wanted to learn more about nonprofit leadership and then community development. And then I wanted to see ways that I could help influence that. So, and then I changed chapters, you know, from being in higher ed into a nonprofit because I felt like I wanted to practice what I was preaching and I wanted to be ready to do some more of the things that I've been talking about people doing. So I think you do need to get prep for it. Does that begin to answer your question?
Yes. Yes. So you're talking about thinking about it and then investigating, literally investigating what it is that you want. Yeah. Are there other things that you think help people ready themselves?
I think that, you know, aside from it, different people need a different amount of clarity on what they're getting into. So just the obvious things about researching what you're getting into make sense. Other things that ready, I think you have to be ready to take the risk that you know that there's going to be some there's going to be some challenge and you're not going to be as comfortable for a while, or maybe hopefully you never get too comfortable, but ready to make change, all the things that go into making change for yourself, understanding what supports you need to make that change, I think is really important. I'm trying to think of what else might be that. That was it for me. I mean, they were big changes going from one to another. And each time I really looked a lot into what I was getting into, but I was also ready to take a risk and look at the opportunity. And I didn't do it overnight. I really thought about what's the right fit for me? How are my actions going to align with my values? And am I going to be able to have the kind of impact that I want? So, but at some point you got to take the leap. So there's obviously an amount of risk involved.
Risk and faith that you can do it. One of the things that I think is important in this is confidence. The real belief that self-efficacy, I can do this, I can make change, I can create something new and different for my life, and then eventually for our world. So I think confidence is a big part of the equation, a really big part. And as you have talked about this, you have a quiet confidence, and I like that. It's not, you know, braggadocious or Mr. Macho Man, but it's a quiet confidence that you can create community, that you can have positive impact, that you can create inclusiveness. So I think confidence is a big factor in this. Yeah.
It's alignment too, right? I mean, you're aligning your actions with your values, and it's not like it should make sense to you. I mean, I've changed, I've had these different chapters, but hopefully through talking to me, you see like there's a clear thread. It's not like I went from each step probably made some sense. It certainly made a lot of sense for me. They were different, ostensibly career moves, but there was a through line through it that made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And the through line is so deeply connected to your values. And that's so, so, so apparent. Any other pearls that you want to share? Any other things that you want to be sure that we talk about before we wrap?
I think for me, the through line that has been really important, and that something that I've looked for in other people and that I try to create in community is this sense of belonging. And that when you belong, you can believe in, right? So belonging leads to believing in what you're doing. And so I think it's really important to feel like, yeah, your actions align with your values and you feel connected and you show up as who you are and you're not faking it in a way just to have the next career notch. You're really seeing the alignment of these things. And so I think that that through line has been really important to me. Any examples that I've given should sound like they're coming from the same guy, and that I am I'm rooted in this around community, around connection, around the kind of leadership. I have a certain approach to leadership, you know, and really trying to, whether you call it servant leadership or really trying to help others be them best selves. There's clarity in all of that. And in the end, I think if you, what's saying ago, like you, there's an elegance. When things really align, you feel that clarity, you feel that sense of elegance, and that if you can, whatever you're actually doing, if you can see that connection and feel like the fit is there, and in the end, if you can really feel like you're at home wherever you are, that's the end message of the book too, right? That's something that
it is.
I'm somewhat obsessed with that. You, how do you feel at home wherever you are? And that's an alignment of your actions with your values so that you have that sturdy foundation. So I'm all for risk taking too. And that's a lot in changing chapters, but there's still got to be the alignment and the coherence in actions and values. So the book cover may change, but the substance is really hopefully clear to me. I've always been doing stuff that help build community, help build belonging, help people thrive, and just doing it in different ways with different organizations and shells. But that's what floats my boat. You know, that's what gives me energy. And but you can't really sustain if you're not doing something that doesn't have that alignment and coherence.
Speaking of the book, when is it going to be re-released?
Oh, how kind of you to ask. So we have a new publisher.
This is for really self-serving purposes. I love the book. I'm telling people about the book and I'm using it in my work and I want other people to use it. So.
All right, cool. Well, it was published by Sage. Then that division of Sage is no more. It's now being published by Atlantic. And you can begin to get it now through Atlantic. But a new edition is coming out shortly. We're in March, early March, in within a month or two. You can get it through Atlantic Publisher, but there'll be an updated version in a month or two with some corrections, but you should be able to get it online more easily. There was a little window in there where you couldn't get it. So that's changing.
I have told people the story of tracking you down and being your stalker so that I could get the book, but I don't want the whole world stalking you. So
it
will be available through Atlantic very, very soon. And I do encourage you to get the book because the title is not just some hokey nonsense. It's real. Your life is your message. And I don't personally believe in reincarnation. I think you get this one life. So you need to make your message as powerful as it can possibly be. So I encourage people, get the book. Please get the book. You don't know this, but I read the book on a cruise ship. I like cruising for relaxation. So I sat out there on the deck, well, actually on my little veranda, and read the book. And it has been one of the most meaningful books that I've read. So I want to encourage other people to do that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being so open about your journey from chapter to chapter to chapter. Thank you for introducing us to Aunt Pearl and the Uptown Girl. That was inspiring for me. So I just want to say thank you. I genuinely appreciate your time with us, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me on. Anytime I can talk about Aunt Pearl is time well spent. So thank you.
Stay well. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.